Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal, and I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage, the Get Her Done edition. We're coming to you at midnight, the bewitching hour, on Thursday evening. We are on location in Nashville, where both Mississippi State and Ole Miss have been eliminated from the SEC tournament. No hot chicken for us anymore. Logan, how are you?
I'm doing good, Parrish. I think this is the first time since we've went to the podcast edition that you and I have sat face-to-face and done this. We did a few Google Hangouts together, but this is the first time we've done the podcast.
This is new, and it's different, and you know, but we're gonna get it done, man. We're gonna talk some basketball in the program. We'll talk a little baseball as well, weather permitting. Some baseball coming up for the Bulldogs and the Rebels this weekend, and spring football, man. It's all around. I know State's had their pro day. Ole Miss's is coming up, so lots to talk about. This is where the three big sports overlap. The Rebels now waiting to see if they will be invited to the NIT. They were kind of on the bubble for that. NIT bids will go out Sunday evening after the NCAA tournament field is set. Folks, before we get on in the show, I want to remind you about some other Daily Journal productions that you need to look for wherever you go to search for your podcast. Check out The Memo, our news podcast with Brad Locke and Derek Russell every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And each Wednesday, check out Prep Rally with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps, all you need to know about high school sports in Northeast Mississippi. Logan, both teams eliminated in the second round. They were able to avoid that that first round game on Wednesday, kind of a play-in into the traditional SEC tournament format. That was Tennessee and Auburn Wednesday evening. The first full day was Thursday, four games, Ole Miss and Alabama in the third game, Alabama winning 81-73, and it was the Stephon Moody show, man. 39 points. It's the second time in three games he's gone for more than 30. Third time this year, Ole Miss is just 1-2 in those games. They defeated the Bulldogs when he scored 43 in the next-to-last regular season game in Oxford. But earlier in the season, he scored 33 against LSU, and the Rebels lost on the road. That's actually three times in SEC play that he's gone for more than 30 points, and Ole Miss is 1-2 in those games. He's actually went more than 30 in a couple of non-conference games as well. But this was all about Moody, and really no help. Not until less than a minute remained did one other player, Tomas Giello, score in double figures. Tomas finished with 11. He was just 1-for-6 from three-point range, but really just no help for Moody. After Giello's 11 points, yeah, they just got nothing from Sebastian Saiz, who really dominated Alabama in the first meeting, January the 7th in Oxford. That was the first game at the new arena at the Pavilion. Saiz had 21 points and 16 rebounds. He was much more quiet in the second game, just 5 points and five rebounds for Saiz in 26 minutes. Alabama coach Avery Johnson talked about the focus that they gave to Saiz, and he really challenged his inside guys, and they responded. Rebounding is not a strength for Alabama. Ole Miss had been 18-2 when out-rebounding its opponent. It was +8 on the glass against the Tide, +8 and a loss. But the difference for Alabama was just the defense in the post. 12 blocked shots by the Tide, five of them by reserve Donta Hall coming off the bench. You know, it's just really a strong defense for Alabama in the post, and they were able to neutralize Saiz. And the Rebels just didn't hit shots. Didn't hit shots from the perimeter. Moody was 8-for-17 from three-point range. Ole Miss was just 11 for 34 overall. So guys not named Moody were just 3 for 17 from behind the arc. And Andy Kennedy would say after the game that, hey, his guys just didn't make shots, got good looks, got better looks, he thought, than Riley Norris of Alabama. But Norris was knocking down shots. He was 4 for 7 from three-point range. Really, got the tide going early in the first half when Moody was hitting shots and Ole Miss was trying to extend the lead. Norris would knock down a three, kept Alabama close. Eventually, Alabama would go on a 19-9 run in the first half and would just kind of take over from there. Things didn't really change in the second half. So might have been Stephon Moody's last game at Ole Miss. We'll see what the NIT future holds. But what a way to go out. 39 points, 12 for 27 from the floor, 8 for 17 from 3, 7 for 10 from the free throw line. And here's a stat, Logan, that I thought kind of also told a story about the game and how dominant Alabama really was in the post. Moody was also the Rebels' second leading rebounder, and was their leading rebounder for much of the game. He had 8 rebounds. Eventually, Mark Canvas Hyman passed him with 9, but Alabama really just kind of controlled that game in the post, and it's other guys made shots. You know, Rhett Obasahan is their guy. They're Moody, 17 points a game. He also was first-team All-SEC, just like Moody. He got in foul trouble, didn't score in the first half, then finished with 17 points, but their other guys hit shots. They had 4 in double figures, and we just didn't see that from Ole Miss. There was no support from Moody's teammates. And I know you got to the gym like right before tip-off, so did you see much of Ole Miss in Alabama?
I saw the whole second half. I got there right at halftime, so I was able to see a lot of that game. And it was 40-40 when I walked in, you know, and it could have been anybody's ball game, but Alabama quickly turned that game around and kind of took control of it at that point early on in that second half, and Ole Miss was playing catch-up the rest of the way. Moody was still doing his thing. You know, he was knocking down deep three-pointers, driving to the basket. I saw him get a couple of fouls on Obasahan, where Moody was just driving right into him, and the officials called the foul on the defensive player. It could have gone either way, in my opinion, because I saw Moody duck his head a couple of times, right, throw his shoulder into him. But it's, you know, Obasahan wasn't in position, so they gave the foul to the defensive player, and that created some foul opportunities for Moody at the line. But, you know, it was just they needed those three-pointers at that point. They didn't need the couple free throws here and there. They needed some big shots and needed them in a hurry, and they just weren't falling for they were falling for Moody, kind of, you know, one out of two might fall, but the rest of the supporting cast just wasn't hitting their threes.
Well, and a nice moment for Moody at the end of the game. He fouled out with about 30 seconds left, and when he did, everybody in the gym stood up and applauded.
That was pretty cool. I saw lots of Kentucky fans in the stands, mm-hmm. lots of Alabama fans. The team Ole Miss was playing stood up and gave the guy a standing ovation. Outstanding career. And what's crazy is he didn't even play, you know, the entire 4 years to appreciate the entire body of work. You only got to see him for 2 years, but he was so great in those 2 years for Ole Miss.
Well, and really, just when you start entering the rare air of Pete Maravich in SEC lore, then you're really accomplishing something. Now there were some stats around Moody going into this game, and he didn't quite get this one, but one of them was if he scored at least 8 points, and he scored 39, if he scored at least 8, he would become only the 5th player in Ole Miss history to score, and 26th in SEC history to score at least 700 points in a season. So 731 points this season for Moody, some rare company there. But had he played enough games, and maybe he will, but I'm thinking he's got to go pretty deep into the NIT to get this. But if he could come up with like 14 more assists, then it's like he becomes the second player in SEC history with 700 points and 150 assists in a season, and the other's Pete Maravich. And I'm thinking, man, when you get in a class with it's like, hey, it's me and Pete Maravich, you know, that's pretty impressive. But we'll see what the future holds for Moody. I don't know that Ole Miss gets into the NIT. I mean, they arrived in Nashville with like an 87 RPI, according to ESPN and a 168 strength of schedule, and you know those just aren't good numbers. You know, they were the seventh team in the SEC. They did go 10-8 in the regular season, so we'll see. You know what the NIT emphasizes when it is filling out its bracket. Mississippi State right after the Ole Miss game. What time did the Bulldogs get started? You know, that late game sometimes can start after 9 o'clock.
It was anticipated, you know, all the approximate was 8:30. It tipped off right at 8:30. It was pretty impressive that that was able to do. I was actually able to get the story into the paper, and that was one thing we were kind of concerned about with a tip-off that late. But we were able to get something in the Friday morning paper in the Daily Journal. But it was kind of the same story of Mississippi State and Georgia the first time around. They played a few weeks ago, and it was kind of the game that Mississippi State got knocked around. Georgia was very physical, knocked them around. Gavin Ware had a horrible game in Starkville when they played that game. And it was kind of that game that Mississippi State turned to, made that turn where they started playing great down the stretch, where they won 5 out of their last 8, 4 out of their last 6 games. And that was kind of the best basketball that Mississippi State played all year was during that stretch right after that Georgia game. And it was kind of the same story this time around. Georgia knocked them around. Gavin Ware played a horrible game inside. He only scored 2 points the entire game. And that's one thing, you know, when your leading scorer only produces 2 points, there's a lot of other people that have to step up and kind of fill that void. And Mississippi State really only had 2 players do that. It was Craig Sword, who's all, you know, been Mississippi State's leading scorer the previous 3 seasons, and then a guy off the bench, and Fred Thomas, another senior, came off the bench and scored 17 points. He was 4 of 8 from the 3-point line. And really just there was no other scoring from there. Quindary Weatherspoon entered that game and had a sprained ankle earlier in the week. Ben Howland told us about that. He missed some practices earlier in the week. He did start and did play through it, but just wasn't the same Quindary Weatherspoon that we were accustomed to seeing over the last month or two. And Mississippi State just, for whatever reason, they got up. I guess it was about the 9:22 mark of the first half. Mississippi State was up by 5. And then they had a little over four minute stretch where they didn't score at all. And during that 4 minute span of time, Georgia scored 12 points, hit 5 of 5 shots. J.J. Frazier got hot, hit a couple of threes during that span too. So all of a sudden, Mississippi State's 5-point lead is turned into a 7-point lead on the other end for Georgia. And Mississippi State was never really able to regain that lead. Georgia went into the half leading 42-34. And expanded that lead early on in the second half. Georgia got up by 16 points kind of midway through that second half. And, you know, Mississippi State looked dead in the water at that point, you know. And you see a lot of seniors. Mississippi State had 6 seniors, and 5 of them played in this game. And you would think that, you know, you really don't have all the emotions knowing that you're playing in your last game. You know, some teams may have thrown in the towel. Mississippi State didn't. They came back and they cut the lead to 4 late in that ball game, cut the lead to 4 a couple of times, and just never really weren't able to draw any closer than that. But that kind of says a lot about Mississippi State seniors and kind of what they can build on for next year, never giving up. In a situation like that, fighting to the very end, and ended up losing by 10, but a lot of those were a couple of free throws down the stretch for Georgia. But Mississippi State ends, you know, the first year of Ben Howland at 14-17 overall, went 7-11 in the SEC, but they've got some stuff that they can build on with the way that they finished this year. I know there are going to be a lot of fresh faces coming back next year, but I think Mississippi State, with that top 5 recruiting class that they've got coming in, top 5, top 10, depending on which recruiting service you look at, they're going to have some pieces. They're going to be young next year, but they've got some pieces to work with.
Now, did Weatherspoon peter out a little bit at the end? You mentioned the ankle injury. That obviously will slow people down. He was not very effective against Ole Miss in Oxford. What was he like in that last regular season game, I guess, against Auburn?
It was kind of ho-hum in that one as well. Just not the same type of guy that, you know, you're accustomed to seeing. He had a good first half against Auburn. He and Malik Newman kind of came in that Auburn game and sparked Mississippi State in that first half, kind of kept them in that ball game into halftime. And then after the half, Mississippi State just blew Auburn out of the gym. But it was those 2 freshmen that kept Mississippi State involved, because Auburn got off to a pretty hot start in that ball game. But those 2 freshmen got Mississippi State back into that game pretty quickly, and they were able to control it from there on. But both of those guys had a good first half. And if both of them come back, that's a pretty solid foundation, along with Eric Holman, for Mississippi State to work with moving forward.
Well, I tell you what, I was very impressed with Weatherspoon this year, and actually had him second on my Howell Trophy ballot. So just a great freshman year, all freshman SEC team for Quindary Weatherspoon. What do you know about? I think the answer is not much, but what do you think about Malik Newman's future?
Well, I asked Ben Hallen about that after the game, and just asked him what the next few weeks are going to be like for Malik, and if he's going to have any input or any, you know, what he would advise Malik to do. And he said that he wasn't going to offer his advice unless he was asked for it. But he said, you know, the spring break, Mississippi State has spring break coming up next week. Malik's going to go home, spend some time with his family, discuss, you know, that decision that he has to make. Coming into the season, it was, you know, Ben Hallinan had even said it. He was going to be a one-and-done type of player. But all the injuries this season and kind of a – I guess it's a mediocre season based on the expectations that a lot of people had for Malik Newman. And, you know, it's not a slam dunk decision that he's going to be a lottery pick in this year's NBA draft like many people believe. So there's going to be a decision that he has to make, and we'll have to see what he comes back with his family. And, you know, once Ben Hallen, if he is involved in that conversation, he said he obviously wants him back. You know, he hopes he comes back, but he's going to leave that decision to Malik and his family of what they decide to choose. But, you know, looking at Malik all season, you know, when he was healthy, I mean, he was good. I mean, probably you saw him, Parrish, in probably his best game against Ole Miss in Starkville when he scored 25 points. That was probably his best game of the season. But you saw flashes of the greatness that everybody saw from him coming out of Callaway and Jackson down there. He's got a great shot, a perfect-looking shot. He elevates, got a good form on that. He's very, very fast. But there's also a lot of things that he needs to work on. He needs to work on his defense. He did improve defensively this season, but there's a lot of things he's got to work on, like finishing around the rim. I mentioned defensively. He's got to work on a ball handling a lot more if he's going to play point guard in the NBA. This was his first year to play point guard, and, you know, it was kind of mixed reviews. I mean, he had a lot of turnovers, you know, didn't make a lot of smart decisions with the basketball sometimes, so... You know, a lot of stuff to work on, but it only takes one team in the NBA draft to like you, and we've seen in past NBA drafts that they'll draft you based on potential, and obviously Malik Newman possesses a lot of potential.
Yeah, coaches have egos. They believe that they can coach it out of you, they can get it out of you, they can make you perform. Coaches have egos. Shifting gears a little bit, Logan, baseball, weather permitting, games on tap this weekend. State's got Oregon, right?
They do.
What do you know about the Ducks?
I know that they're very, very good. They were supposed to play actually tonight at Alabama, and that game got rained out. And John Cohen has got his fingers crossed that Mississippi State is going to be able to get all three of those games in. They actually moved their Sunday game, which was originally supposed to start at 11 a.m. They bumped it up even 30 minutes more, so they're playing at 10:30 on Sunday morning. That's kind of a rare occasion, but
that's right after the offering.
Exactly. It's going to be
and before the benediction.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a big morning person. Yeah. So I do get up on Sunday mornings and go to church. Yeah. So you know, that's a tough one for me. I'm usually on my way to Columbus for church in the morning, and instead, I guess I'll be at the press box at Duty Noble, probably watching a lot of rain. But you know, they really want that game to get that game in, especially the way that last weekend ended for Mississippi State. We went out to Los Angeles. They lost to UCLA. They beat USC on their home field, and then they tied Oklahoma at playing at Dodger Stadium. And that tie was due to travel restrictions, and you hate to see a game end in a tie. And, you know, Mississippi State needs this win. It could really help their RPI if they could get one, maybe even two games from Oregon in this series. But it's going to be tough. Oregon's going to throw three left-handers against Mississippi State. Mississippi State hadn't seen a whole lot of left-handers this year, so we'll have to see kind of what to do. And kind of a neat thing, Mississippi State's best hitter this year has been Jack Kruger, a junior college transfer. Well, Jack Kruger played his freshman year at Oregon, so he's actually an Oregon transfer, and started 17 games for the Ducks that year, hit just 208. Well, he's really hitting a lot higher than that. He's hitting about around the 500 mark. He's already hit three home runs. I think he has 19 RBIs. He's actually leading the country with 9 doubles right now. So he's started the season off very, very hot right now. He's playing designated hitter. He's a catcher by trade, but he had the shoulder surgery, and his shoulder just isn't healed enough to play catcher just yet for their arm strength. So he's playing designated hitter for Mississippi State. Going to go with Dakota Hudson on the mound on Friday, Austin Sexton on the mound on Saturday, and a TBA on Sunday. So Have to see who that third starter is going to be for Mississippi State. John Cohen did say that Vance Tatum is up for that third role. And if they don't use him in relief in those first two ball games, he could get the ball on Sunday.
Well, Ole Miss is at home against Grambling. The Rebels, if they get three games in, should have a great chance to finish to win all three and start 15-1 on the year. They are 12-1 right now. But the flip side of that is, look, you're going to lose strength of schedule points just by having Grambling on the schedule. I mean, they got an RPI of like 295, and man, it's going to really drag you down if you happen to lose one of those games. So we'll see how many games Ole Miss and State can play this year. It's really been about pitching and defense for the Rebels at the start of this season, although they have been hitting better of late. They went to Conway, South Carolina last weekend, hitting just 235. They've gotten that team average up to 269. Tate Blackman, a lot of excitement for him with that opening weekend against Florida International. This is a guy who was a top 50 recruit last year and struggled, hit around 200. He continues to swing it well, and he's hitting 364 right now. So they are hitting a little bit better, but this is still a pitching and defense team right now. And the good news for Ole Miss, what has allowed them to win some games, is these two junior college transfers that they were going to count on, who are in those weekend rotation roles, Chris Smith and Sean Johnson, they're pitching it well. You didn't know exactly what you were going to get from those guys, and maybe you still don't. Jury is still out until they get some SEC innings under their belts. But you know, these guys were good enough to help Ole Miss win two out of three against Louisville, and they really were in every game, even when they lost on Saturday in game two. It wasn't because of pitching. So pitching has been pretty strong for this group right now, a 2.54 team ERA, and they've been good out of the bullpen as well. So Ole Miss and Grambling this weekend, weather permitting. Spring football, Ole Miss completing its second week, and we'll take off next week for spring break. We haven't gotten to see much of the Rebels, but you know, they're out there. and I'll tell you that Miles Hartsfield, the early enrollee prep school guy last year, the top prep school safety in the country, they're starting him out at the Husky position right now. Really good spring, really turning heads right now. They're really impressed with what they see from Miles Hartsfield in terms of physicality and football IQ. They think he can play any position in the secondary, so that's just one name to keep an eye on. Mississippi State, Logan, who did what at Pro Day? Who stood out at Pro Day?
Well, obviously I was on my way to Nashville for Pro Day.
That's what Twitter's for.
Yeah, I saw some numbers on there and kind of glanced over that stuff while I was working on my baseball preview this afternoon. Looks like DeRunya Wilson was able to shave some time off of his 40. Chris Jones had another great showing at Pro Day. They actually had a track guy show up. And really impressed. I think he weighed in at, I think he was 6'3", 273 pounds, and had a higher vertical jump than cornerback Tevez Calhoun. He ran in like a 4.7 40. Really turned some head. Guy's never played football, I think, at a down in his life. But obviously, when you put up those types of numbers, it's going to draw some interest. And Dak Prescott had a good day. Some guys didn't work out. Will Redmond didn't work out again. He's still hurt. Joe Morrow did not work out. Ryan Brown did not work out. So some guys that could go in the draft did not show at Pro Day. Looking at their spring football, Mississippi State's had one spring football practice earlier this week on Wednesday. And we were able to watch all the practice. All of Mississippi State's spring practices are open, and they close everything up in the fall. So, unlike you, you know, it's kind of you get to see a little bit here and there, you know, throughout the year. I only get to see Mississippi State in spring ball and a few bowl practices. But you know, spring ball, a lot of the eyes are on the quarterback position. Obviously, you have Nick Fitzgerald, Elijah Staley, Damian Williams, Nick Tiano trying to replace Dak Prescott there, and. We were all interested to see who was going to get that first snap out there, and Nick Fitzgerald took the first snap in the first drill. Damian Williams took the first snap in the scrimmage at the end of practice. We talked to Dan Mullen after practice to find out, you know, what went into that decision. He said it was based on grade point average for the spring. So no clues into really what that was. But all four of those guys took first team reps during that day. It's going to be a healthy competition all the way up and probably until the kickoff of the opening game in the fall. But obviously Nick Fitzgerald was Dak Prescott's backup this past season. Damian Williams spent 2 years as Dak Prescott's backup. So those are probably the leading two candidates. And some more spring news, Mississippi State's leading wide receiver, Fred Ross, was not at practice Wednesday. He's actually had surgery on his groin that day. He's going to miss the entire spring. It was one of those things where he could have probably went through spring and played next season with that injury, but it probably just was going to be one of those nagging injuries that it was constantly bothering him. Dan Mullen said it had been bothering him for quite some time. They wanted to just go ahead and get that fixed, and he should be good to go for the fall. He's going to miss him during the spring, but luckily he's an upperclassman. He's played a lot of football, so it's going to give some of those younger receivers some chances.
Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage. I'm Parrish Alford, joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast with Derek Russell and Brad Locke, and Prep Rally, high school sports with Gene Phelps and Brad Locke. Look for those where you look for your listening material, both productions of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Thanks for being with us, folks. We'll be back next week.